The rise and fall of the Berlin Wall. Today, the 9th of November, marks the 34th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, one of the most incredible answers to prayer in my lifetime. The Berlin Wall was seen as a fact of life that we thought would be there forever. I must say, when I saw the Berlin Wall as a youngster, I thought it was going to be there till Jesus returned. I had no confidence that it would ever come down in my lifetime. Berlin was subject to more aerial bombardments than probably any other city in the history of the world. The 1,000 bomber raids coming down, incinerating the city, vast amounts of destruction. This is what the center of Berlin looked like at the end of the Second World War in 1945. 1,000 bomber raids had reduced magnificent buildings of one of the greatest capital cities in the world to rubble and ruin. Many churches and cathedrals like this absolutely shattered. The Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church in 1934 looked absolutely magnificent. Immediately after the war, absolute wreckage. This is what the first service in the ruined service in Kaiser Wilhelm Church looked like in Pentecost 1953. My daughter sang in this cathedral in part of Cape Town Youth Choir. The women of Berlin had to rebuild it brick by brick. The men were either dead or they were in Soviet concentration camps working as slave laborers for the next 10 years. So there were no men around to do the building. The women had to rebuild Berlin physically, brick by brick. And this is what the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church looked like. This is what the Unter den Linden looked like at that stage. Absolutely phenomenal. And this is after it being cleared away some months after the war. So the rubble in the streets had been moved, but it was still ruins, ruins, and more ruins. And thanks to these big three, Joseph Stalin, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Winston Churchill, they had cheerfully betrayed the whole of Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain in the hands of the Soviets. And worse than that, a secret agreement at Yalta was that all Russians in Europe, Russian civilians or soldiers, those who had been emigres, refugees, didn't matter what, even if their parents had fled from Russia to escape the Soviet Union and they'd been born in Western Europe and they'd never even been in Russia, all Russians were to be evicted, were to be handed over to Stalin's Soviet Union. And this betrayal at Yalta was absolutely horrific. Every country participated in this in Western Europe. The French, the British, the Americans. In fact, of all the countries in Western Europe, only Liechtenstein resisted handing over Russians, and Liechtenstein is one of the smallest countries in the world. But all the other countries, Norway, Sweden, even Switzerland, handed over Russians, and the British and Americans marched them at bayonet points and forced them across the river into the hands of the NKVD. 5.5 million Russians. And of those, 20% were shot out of hand immediately. 20% were sentenced to life imprisonment in the Gulag Archipelago and died there. Another 17%, only 5 to 10 year sentences. And about another 7% were exiled. They were not allowed to go back to homes, but they had to live in other areas where, although they were, they lived, they had no means of living, and many died of starvation as well. Absolutely horrific. Now, Berlin, while Germany was divided in half, between the Western and the Soviet zone, Berlin was also divided. But there was there were some airlift options, because when the Soviets started to strangle West Berlin, no water, no electricity, no food, the Western Allies did fly in relief to Berlin, and the Berlin airlifts, one of the first great actions of the Cold War. But the Allies were now confronting one another, and everything Berlin needed to survive had to be flown in by aircraft, because all the land routes were blocked by the Soviets. A ruined city, Tempelhof, one of the biggest airports in the world, was a scene of rows of aircraft flying in essential survival to keep the city alive. Well, Berlin did survive to become a beacon of freedom. West Berlin, a very dynamic island of freedom in an ocean of state oppression. By the way, recently they opened up a memorial to the Berlin airlift near Tempelhof, reminding people of the aircraft used and of the fact that help came from above. Now, the iconic symbol of the Cold War was the Brandenburg Gate, which was meant to be the center of Berlin, but it became the fault line between the GDR, or the German Democratic Republic. And whenever you see the word democratic in a country's name, you know it isn't. You know, Democratic Republic of the Congo, things like that. So DDR was absolutely horrific, and they needed to build a phenomenal iron curtain to keep the people in. So when we speak about the Berlin Wall, we often think of just the wall between East and West Berlin, but it's also symbolic of the whole of the Iron Curtain separating not just East Germany from West Germany, but the whole of Soviet-controlled Warsaw Pact, Eastern Europe. And so basically you've got to think from Trieste in the north to right down to the south here, encompassing Yugoslavia, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, and behind it Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Albania. All these countries were behind the Iron Curtain. When we call this Eastern Europe, that's not really accurate. This is really Central Europe. Russia is Eastern Europe. This is Central Europe. East Germany, Czechoslovakia, that's Central Europe. That's not Eastern Europe, really. Although we call it Eastern Europe, but correctly speaking, all these countries were betrayed by Roosevelt and Winston Churchill into the hands of Stalin's oppressive Soviet Union. That included countries that had been independent before the Second World War. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, Poland. All these countries, 150 million Christians, 10 countries betrayed behind the Iron Curtain by the West, who said they were fighting for freedom, and yet they handed over most of Central Europe into the hands of the most oppressive, totalitarian, anti-Christian regime in the history of the world, the worst mass murder in history, Joseph Stalin. And the Brandenburg Gate was symbolic of all this. A city divided under Lenin's disciples. Berliners throwing stones at tanks. That's pretty helpless and hopeless, but that's how people were reduced to. Here in Bucharest, in Hungary, people burning pictures of Stalin. Upon the learning of the death of Joseph Stalin in 1956, there was an uprising in Bucharest in Hungary. The uprising was against communism. The statues of Joseph Stalin were pulled down and smashed. And Russians out of Hungary, the people wanted freedom. And as the Soviets invaded Hungary, murdered hundreds of thousands of people in the oppression to crush Hungary and force Hungary to be under the Soviet Union. And the destruction was horrific. In Czechoslovakia, in 1968, the Communist Party tried to have communism with a human face, as though that's possible. And the result was 250,000 Soviet soldiers, including Warsaw Pact soldiers from all over the Eastern Pact, invaded Czechoslovakia, crushed the people. This looks like Second World War damage. This is the kind of damage caused by the Soviets invading Czechoslovakia, in this case, 1968. People throwing rocks or trying to set ablaze some buses across the road to block the way for tanks. The tanks, the rockets, they all came in. And Bill Bathman, in his book Going Through, speaks about how the Soviet tanks came into Vinslow Square and just shaved off the sides of all the cars that were parked on the side of the road, just crushed or shaved off the sides, while these massive T-62 tanks just went straight over them. And this is what Prague looked like in Czechoslovakia in 1968. Soviet tanks invading and taking over and just forcing communism on the people. You can't even have communism with a human face. You will have Soviet communism, that's it. But the people of Czechoslovakia resisting, face of resistance. Now in Berlin, at one point, Berlin's meant to be an international city, a free city, so-called. But at one point, it was just like a road between East and West. And so you sometimes had Ussies or Easterners climbing out the window and running across the road with some of their belongings from East to West. So at some point, the Soviets realized they've got to do something about this. And so they start to seal off East Berlin to block the refugees who were trying to flee, and they were threatening to fire on protesting crowds. So at the Brandenburg Gate, suddenly the VOPOs of Volkspolizei, pitched up in force to block people while they built a Berlin Wall. They built first barbed wire and then physical walls, with the Soviets always looking over the shoulder to ensure that the builders, the workers, didn't defect from the workers' paradise. It got very ugly at Checkpoint Charlie as the Soviets started to move their tanks towards, and Americans moved their tanks, and Third World War could have broken out so easily. Just one person had to lose their nerve and shoot, and the whole thing could have... They were at point-blank range, not even 100 metres away, tanks facing off against one another. And this is Checkpoint Charlie. The GDR border police walled up buildings, front entrances. Anything facing the West Berlin border was closed off from the ground floor with barbed wire and later bricks. And then they started to build walls down the centre of the street to block people from going from one side to the other. This picture is a bit tragic. Here's a Volkspolizei on the East German side. And there's a child who was on the other side, maybe visiting friends, and now he wants to come back towards his own family. And against orders, this man opened the barbed wire so that this man, this youngster, could come through onto back to the east. And for that, this poor soldier got court-martialed and shipped off to labor camp. A VOPA sitting, waiting to shoot anyone who tries to climb over the wall. A wedding couple and wedding guests on the sidewalk waving to family in the Soviet sector. At first you could do this, but later the walls got so high that you couldn't even see your friends on the other side. And now you can see the Brandenburg Gate becomes the center point as they're building their wall around that. And the chariots, the four-horse chariot on the top, used to face towards the west, but the Soviets went up and turned it to face towards the east. So they had a wall, and then they had anti-vehicle traps, anti-tank traps, but that would stop any vehicle. And then they had a further barrier that people couldn't see on the other side. And soon, when they speak about the Berlin Wall, in many cases it's not one wall, it was two walls with a whole lot of minefields and tripwires and obstacles in the middle. And they started to go into the second generation wall, which was 3 meters high, and that's over 13 feet high, and then they had the rounded top. And the reason for the rounded top is you can't throw a grappling hook over, you can't get a grip to pull yourself up or over. And so the rounded top was to make it difficult for people to get over, of course. Houses too close to the border got destroyed, demolished. Even the Church of Reconciliation, so-called, was blown up because it obscured the communist border guards' view of people along the death strip to escape. But people still escaped. Thousands escaped. On this occasion, you could see a tense moment. This young woman had fled across, and this is the border. This is a Checkpoint Charlie, and here's the German police on the west confronting the VOPOs of Volkspolizei on the other side. You can see an AK-47 being pointed, and these men are going forward to try and protect this young woman from being forced back into the east. She had crossed the line, so she is entitled to their protection. Then there's other famous escapes. This picture you can see on the stairwell coming up into the upper room. It's of a VOPO Volkspolizei, a Checkpoint Charlie, looking left, looking right, and then later just take a running leap going west, leaping over the barbed wire, and a cameraman snapped us as he leapt over. He's unslinging his AK-47, he flings it to the ground, and he puts his hands up because, you know, you don't want to get shot at this tense place looking like you're invading or something. So as he got over, he flung his AK-47 down and lifted his hands to show he's got no weapon, he's not being a threat to them. And he wasn't shot, thankfully. This is one more tragic story. It's Peter Fetcher, 18 years old, on the left. On the right, a few days later, shot in the suit that he is given for his birthday, shot dead in the back. He has escaped with two of his friends, and he got over the wall. His friend escaped, but he got shot in the back, and the communists did nothing. They waited for him to bleed to death before they actually carried him back. Peter Fetcher, just one of hundreds of victims shot for attempting to go from Berlin to Berlin, to go from East Berlin to West Berlin. And he's one of the people remembered here. Age 18, 1st of August 1962. The Brandenburg Gate becomes the symbol of the Cold War and of the Iron Curtain. And you've got the confrontation between East and West most vivid. Warning, you are now leaving West Berlin. And here's border police armored personnel carriers in the square in front of Brandenburg Gate, the 14th of August 1961, as they start to build the wall to try and prevent people escaping. They had to build everything from watchtowers with searchlights and machine guns to they've got different barricades and bunkers, and they've got anti-tank ditches, you can't drive a vehicle over it. And then they've got the final main wall. So when you think of the wall, there's still quite a gap between, of a death strip between the inner wall and the outer wall. And of course floodlights to make it harder for people to escape at night. And so again, you can see, when you speak of the Berlin Wall, we speak about a complex series of obstacles. It's the biggest obstacle course ever created in the world. And cutting through a city, a famous historic city with great buildings on both sides and just arbitrary lines drawn down the road. And this is the wall that tested the spirit of the people in Berlin. And yet people escaped, thousands escaped. Tens of thousands of people escaped, despite hundreds being killed. And so you've got everything from guard dogs, electrified fences, concrete walls, and spikes in the ground. They had spikes, area of what they called Stalingrass. And Stalingrass was spikes sticking up. So if you step on it, you're going to get, coming through your shoe or your boot, these metal spikes, sort of bed of nails, you could say. So spikes, watchdogs, and then there's areas where there's just plain sand. So, which was regularly swept, so that if somebody's footprint went on, they could see. So if a border guard said, you know, I didn't see someone crossing, well, if they've got the footprint there, well, it was in your sector, you know, then this border guard's in trouble. If somebody crossed the section, they could see because they've got an area of untouched sand. Ditches, of course. This is, as Margaret Thatcher put it, the Berlin Wall stands as concrete proof of the failure of communism. The Berlin Wall stands as proof that when people have a choice, they choose to be free. Freedom's had its problems, but we've never needed to build walls to keep our people in, quote unquote, from Margaret Thatcher. Initially, it was quite primitive, but those anti-vehicle traps made it difficult for any vehicle to drive through. And then more and more, the inner wall, the outer wall, and in between, you've got anti-vehicle traps. And people tried to escape, but there's barbed wire on the top as well. Machine gun towers, electric fences. Now bear in mind, you know, with electricity, the most expensive electricity would be your heater or your kettle. Now, one section, like a meter section of electric fence, the electric bill for that would be more than a heater or a kettle. So 1,127 kilometers of electric fence between East and West Germany, if I'm not mistaken. And then homes had no heating in East Germany. They could waste electricity on electric fences, but they couldn't provide heating for the people's homes. And behind the second generation wall in front of the Brandenburg Gate, there's foreground fences to screen the building work. So they had some things just as screens that you couldn't see what's going on the other side. And these are vehicle traps. You can imagine whichever direction you hit it, you're going to just destroy your vehicle. You're not going to be able to get through that kind of anti-vehicle trap. And 3 meters high or 13 feet high and rounded top, very difficult to climb over. But people went under it. Tunnels. Tens of thousands of people escaped through the tunnels. And the ingenuity, and then one man used a crossbow to shoot a line across the other side and reeled in a cable and put his son and later himself on like the zip line and was able to go over the Stalin spaghetti and the obstacles, go straight over from one side to the other. So the communists started to demolish buildings close to the wall to make that hard to do. Apartment buildings blown up. You know, they start off by land, bread, peace, homes. That communists promise everything people want. But do they deliver it? No, you can be sure they do not. Destroying homes, destroying churches, blowing up everything. And now people standing on stepladders at street corners to wave to their family members the other side. There were great escapes. And here's one of them where people are fleeing through the barbed wire fence with the cooperation of some on the western side. This poor woman here, you could see as she's trying to rush through the fence, her forehead catches the barbed wire, her head's flung back, and she must have gotten a horrible injury, but she's still smiling a few minutes later. And so they started to build under special searchlights late at night, Here you can see people holding up their child that's been born so that family members on the other side could see. This is early on before they built higher walls and more screens. And clearing the gardens and homes close to the border area, destroying it so that they could create a death strip, 1961. They emptied all the houses facing the Berlin Wall and evicted the people so that it would be harder for people to escape. Barbed wire fences, August 1961. And tank obstacles, widening of the death strip. Cylindrical top makes it hard for anyone to get a handhold to climb over the wall. And this is also, there's many rivers and canals in Berlin, and some people try to swim across. And here's one of the people, Gunter Litten, was shot in the back while trying to escape, and his body was recovered from the canal. I think he was trying to swim across at the time. The first generation wall followed the line separating the border between the Berlin city and the occupation sectors, and that's why it doesn't follow a straight line many times. Friends are being separated, people talking across the wall at first. And here they could initially speak over the wall before the wall got higher and thicker. And there are protests against people being arrested and imprisoned for trying to escape, for trying to go from one part of the city to the other part. One family managed to escape in this bus, photo taken at the refugee camp. They drove this bus through the wall successfully. Berliners waving to family and friends in East Berlin. And people passing goods from West Berlin to neighbors in East Berlin by a basket and them hoisting it up. And that's before they start to thicken the wall. Provisional barriers and evacuation of buildings by people considered too close. And you see what these Vopos are holding? They're holding mirrors. They would flash the mirrors in the faces of people with cameras to try and prevent people getting pictures of what was going on. So it was one of the games they'd play, is trying to reflect sun to get too much dazzling light to dazzle those who are trying to get a picture of what's going on. Now, initially, they built these platforms that people in West Berlin could watch and see what's going on the other side. Later on, they built these for tourists as well to climb up and look. West Berliners still having coffee on the street in front of the Berlin Wall in Potsdamer Platz, 1961. And then artists almost immediately started to put graffiti on the western side of the wall. Now, bear in mind, the wall was firmly within the eastern side so that they could do repairs on it. So actually, this is still belonged to East Berlin, but they couldn't physically stop you approaching the western side of the wall. And so artists started to put graffiti there. Said the biggest outdoor gallery. Then they started to pull down some of the older walls. The fourth generation wall starts to be built up here at the back, and so the older wall is being abandoned. Border troops clearing a 10-meter wide strip for the erection of the wall and the creation of a death strip, already in September 1961, and cutting down trees in the street in order to make escape more difficult, less camouflage, less ability to see or to be obscured from the border guards. And then they start to brick up houses. See how all the windows are bricked up so that people couldn't escape or see through there. All the windows bricked up. That's even down the side here. And then they started to put up propaganda, of course, towards the west, people looking at them. So East Germany and East Berlin was meant to be the best of the Soviet bloc, the best of the Warsaw Pact. And so they were often trying to suggest that they had higher standards, and they did have higher standards than the rest of Eastern Europe. But compared to West Berlin, they were very poor. So you can see regularly Soviet tanks being moved to the border crossings, and there was literally staring down the barrel of these artillery pieces. Floodlights now in order to make it harder for people to escape under cover of darkness. People being shot for trying to escape. And there are many memorials along the wall for people who have been shot on certain places, just like we will see some flowers and cross on the side of our roads of people who died in a car accident. This is Checkpoint Charlie. I've smuggled through here. And pedestrian, you'd walk through here and you'd go through this building here where they'd strip and search you for all sorts of things. Very hard to manage to smuggle through there. And there are people who manage to escape, but you've got to make all these turns and go under the metal barriers while being shot at. And people did escape. Although this bus almost made it, but they got all machine gunned to death before they made it through the final barrier. Memorial cross and flowers for, in this case, Peter Fetcher, who bled to death behind the wall after being shot trying to climb on 20th of August 1962. And this is a memorial to Ida Sickman, who was fatally injured when she leapt from the third floor apartment, the window of her apartment, and landed on the ground and injured herself. She was hoping she could escape, but injured herself too much. And here's other victims, in this case, 47-year-old Rudolf Urban. Anyone who has proclaimed violence as method must choose lying as his principle. And I think we can see that with terrorists, whether the IRA or the PLO or the ANC or SWAPO. If you've got violence as your method, you need to have lying as your principle. And violence can only be concealed by a lie, and the lie can only be maintained by violence. And so the pillar of the state in the Soviet Union is the lie. But you think that's the pillar of the state in a lot of Western countries now too, like the United States under Biden, how the Democrats are a pack of pathological liars. They lie about everything, whether it's the vaccine, whether it's a lockdown, whether it's a masquerade, whether it's the COVID, whatever it is, they're lying about it. And so the first generation wall getting reinforced, and then here a wall going straight to the farmyard of some poor family. Literally the farm, you could have from one room being in the west and the other room being in the east. The border sealed off with barbed wire, and border troops watch from the towers. And you can see the old type of towers and the new type of towers being built. And the border starts to be sealed off first with barbed wire fences, a death strip, observation bunkers, guard towers, road patrols, and floodlights. And now the buildings on the left are in West Berlin, and the sidewalk is in East Berlin. The Church of Reconciliation demolished 28th of January 1985. That's quite late in the day. The ship, the Moby Dick, in the lake, the border between East and West ran directly through the middle of the lake, and people tried to swim across. Very spooky at night when you've got all the searchlights on and the barbed wire barricades lit up, resembling a prison camp, which actually it was. American tanks at Checkpoint Charlie, at Friedrichstrasse, 28th of October 1961 was a big confrontation. And the West Berlin police cleared the rubble of a Berlin Wall that collapsed in the night. And East Berlin police in the background, VOPOS or Volkspolizei. US soldiers on patrol following the escape of two GDR citizens. And this is Checkpoint Charlie. Sandbags, and we've got a bazooka. This is during the Cold War, anything could have happened. They could have started the Third World War right there. There's enough tension there. And this is the Conrad Sherman defection, so famous at Checkpoint Charlie. Some poor soul who failed to escape, being marched off. Other people succeeding to escape. There's some amazing stories of people who just drove straight through to freedom, smashed their way through the barricades to freedom, or climbed underneath with tunnels. One of the most extraordinary stories, which Walt Disney made a film on, a dramatic film, a family, later two families, who made a hot air balloon and escaped from East Germany to West Germany by using a hot air balloon that went over the wall. In fact, shame, their first attempt failed. They flew and flew and flew, and then when they landed, they found they were just 20 meters short of West Germany. They're still in the East. Very discouraging. They had to abandon their balloon and start again from scratch. And all the time, the new town was against them because the East German police would be following up the forensic clues and would be able to find out who made this balloon at some stage. And in the end, they escaped successfully with another family. But then that required huge amounts of fabric, vast amounts of equipment, and a lot of ingenuity. But two families escaped. Then there's people escaped in vehicles. Some of the famous escapes This poor girl cut her forehead. I've seen video footage of it at Checkpoint Charlie Museum, going through the barbed wire fence, and she was pulled back by just not ducking far enough under the barbed wire. Now, you see all the barricades people have to go around. Well, this man managed to escape with his fiance behind a seat and his mother-in-law in the boot, and he removed the window of the convertible so that he could drive under the barricades. And he literally succeeded in zooming between all those barricades and going under those peppermint sticks, these border metal bars. And so later you see the Marxists putting extra metal frames down to make it impossible for someone to try that one again. This very surprising tailor, she made the Soviet uniforms for her fiancé and friends, and they liberated a Soviet staff car, drove through Checkpoint Charlie saluting, and she was at the feet. They're one of the more successful ruses to escape. There's some amazing things that people did, including removing the petrol tank of a Beetle, and a young woman is very petite and athletic, cramming into where the petrol tank would have been, and driving out through Checkpoint Charlie. All kinds of anti-communist graffiti on the walls, and East and West gathering at the Brandenburg Gate when they start to open it in November 1989, just before it fell. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, "You can resolve to live your life with integrity. The simple step of a simple, courageous man is not to take part in the lie, not to support deceit. Let your credo be this: let the lie come into the world, let it even dominate the world, but not through me." He said, the way we can defeat the Soviet Union is we stop believing the lie, we stop applauding the lie, we stop repeating the lie. And the Soviet Union ultimately collapsed when normal citizens stopped believing, repeating, and applauding the lie, which was the pillar of the state. In our country, the lie has become not only a moral category, but a pillar of the state. In keeping sound about evil, in burying it so deep within us that no sign of it appears on the surface, we're implanting it. It will rise up a thousandfold in the future. When we neither punish nor reproach evildoers, we are not simply protecting their trivial old age. We are thereby ripping the foundations of justice from beneath new generations. I call upon America to be more careful with its trust. Prevent those from falsely using social justice to lead you down a false road. They are trying to weaken you. We can only reach with determination for the warm hand of God, which we have so rashly and self-confidently pushed away. How did the Soviets gain control of a great Christian country like Russia? Solzhenitsyn said, we forgot God. And it's documented in the Black Book of Communism, written by six Communist Party members, including Stéphane Cortés, who is the editor of the Communisme magazine in the Communist Party of France. He is the editor. And this document's a 900-page blockbuster that you can drop it on a liberal's foot and he will limp. And it's just from their own files, their own documentation, documenting over 100 million people killed by Soviet Union and its allies between 1917 and 1991. Officially, according to their own files. Here's some poor souls captured trying to escape from East to West Berlin. You might recall back in the 1980s, at the height of the Cold War, American President Ronald Reagan had a meeting in front of Brandenburg Gate, and with Helmut Kohl, German Chancellor, just to the side of him, and he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, if you are serious about detente, tear down this wall." It got massive applause. Well, Mr. Gorbachev didn't tear down the wall, but the citizens of Berlin did. East and West, they physically rose up and started in November 1989 to tear down the Berlin Wall. This man's being sprayed with a hosepipe from the East German side, but it hasn't stopped him. He continues to hack away. People just came and started chiseling away and destroying the Berlin Wall, physically, until they ripped down a section of people standing on the wall, daring the East German Vopos, the Volkspolizei, to shoot them. Well, communism collapsed, and the idols to Stalin and Lenin came down, and so the fall of the Berlin Wall was a pivotal event, and it led to the collapse of the Iron Curtain throughout the whole of Eastern Europe. Goodbye, Lenin. Now, this stands as a monument to the failure of communism, the fact that they need to build walls to keep their people in, their workers' paradise. Something must be wrong. and Dzerzhinsky's statue down. Lenin, this is in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. That was toppled too. Idols came down. It's our call to smash cultural Marxism. Marxism is evil. It's one of the greatest enemies of Christianity and of freedom. And we should smash communism in all its roles. Now, our mission, along with many other Christian missions to the communist world, played our part in exposing the atrocities and the weaknesses and the failures and the evils, the hypocrisies, the crimes of communism by publishing eyewitness testimonies and photographic evidence of the sufferings of the persecuted church and their resilience in the face of relentless persecution. Notice this communist march. Notice they've got the big star of Lenin. But the flags are not only communist flags. You can see a lot of Cuban flags, yes. But there's India's flag. India's not communist. There's the flag of, you can see, okay, there's Hungary. They're communist at that stage. But there are other flags here that are plainly not communist, which they've adopted them all. There's North Korea. There's Red China. There's Soviet Union. But Bible smuggling, Christian radio programs, regular visits and encouragement from the West, like my brother Andrew, a good friend of our family, Richard Vormbrandt and others made a key part. Leadership training, including training underground Bible colleges, all of this helped to play a part in strengthening the internal resistance against communist tyranny. This is in Bulgaria, and if you're Bulgarian, it's not up to scratch. On the walls it says, one Lord, one faith, one baptism. And front says, God is love, in Bulgarian, Slavic. Behind the scenes, Bible smugglers like Bill Bethman and many of his co-workers and In Touch Mission pioneers were working. This is Bill Bethman, my father-in-law, who ministered 67 years in Europe, much of that behind the Iron Curtain, ministering throughout Russia, China, all over Eastern Europe, and gospel radio broadcasts, Radio Free Europe. You'll see we've got our radio studio up here in the upper room. It's called Network Pioneers. Bill Bethman started the network ministry and he started Pioneers. And so in honor of Bill Bethman's radio ministry, lots of which was broadcast on Radio Free Europe and Transworld Radio, we've named our studio the Network Pioneer Studio. Bill Bethman preparing one of his radio broadcasts to go into Eastern Europe. This is his own recording studio in America. The underground churches, which I had the joy of visiting and ministering to before the Iron Curtain came down, led to the Leipzig prayer movement and the seven-year Jericho prayer march. 1982, Brother Andrew told us at a devotions at Hospital Christian Fellowship of this new initiative, the seven-year Jericho prayer march. If you read in Joshua chapter 6, the Lord commands Joshua to take the children of Israel around the walls of Jericho once every day for 6 days, but on the seventh day to go around seven times and in absolute silence. And at the end of the seventh time around Jericho, they were to blow the trumpets and give a great shout of praise. And God brought down the walls of Jericho. And Brother Andrew said the Leipzig prayer meeting's already started, and the symbol is the candle. The candle is a symbol of light. We're called to be the light of the world. Now, not all the darkness can put out the light of a single candle. Light is more powerful than darkness. Where the light goes, the darkness must flee. Greater is he who is in us than him who is in the world. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I am more than a conqueror through Christ Jesus who loved me. And so the seven-year Jericho prayer march was launched in 1982 to pray for the coming down of the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain and the opening up of Eastern Europe to the gospel. Well, when I heard Brother Andrew give this vision in 1982 at Hospital Christian Fellowship, I thought this is a bridge too far. Berlin Wall is going to be up till Jesus comes. Not going to happen in my lifetime. And when I prayed, it was probably with no faith. And yet in 1989, 7 years later, the Berlin Wall did come down. The Iron Curtain did collapse. It opened up Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union to the gospel. And all these prayer meetings were vindicated. And it culminated in the toppling of communist dictatorships from one end of Eastern Europe to the other. These protests played their part. The Berlin Wall did tumble. And the day came on the 9th of November 1989 when the people gathered and celebrated bringing down the Berlin Wall. No politicians achieved this. This was done by the people on the ground, the persecuted churches, the prayers of God's people. And the two Germanys united after 45 years of separation with jubilation and a vow of peace. Absolutely staggering. people dancing in the streets and in East Germany, opening up the accordions and singing in the streets. In Prague, in Czechoslovakia, massive protests against the Soviets. Resistance in Romania. You can see the V for victory over communism was a symbol of resistance. That's not the peace sign, that's the V for victory against communism sign. Burning communist flags and symbols, they cut out the middle of the Romanian flags, cut out the Soviet red star and other communist symbols of hammers and sickles. And so that's the symbol of revolutionary Romania. And resistance, the army joined the people in fighting against the communist government and fighting against the Securitate. Here you can see the army, supported by the people, fighting against the Securitate in Romania. This is the Christmas Revolution. Started on the 16th of December, ended on 25th of December, Christmas Day. They shot Ceausescu, and Ceausescu shot by his own army, and the people dancing in the streets saying, Dracula is dead, the Antichrist has been killed on Christmas Day. Church bells rang all over Romania and all over Europe. All kinds of demonstrations and protests. Romanian soldier with a flower that the civilians given him. People came up to Romanian soldiers to give them flowers, thanking them for standing with the people against the government. And the white ribbon was a symbol of resistance. These are the people who were fighting against the government. They weren't on the communist side. Some more Romanian flags of resistance. They've gotten rid of the communist symbols in the middle. And people celebrating the news that Ceausescu is overthrown, this communist dictator. Romania is probably the worst of the Eastern Bloc countries by 1989. In this Timișoara Square, thousands of Christians were massacred by Securitate, who came in with tanks, literally driving over the people, machine gunning the people. And people fled towards the cathedral. And were machine gun, you can see the tank tracks over the grass here. People machine gun on the steps of the cathedral, blood flowed down the stairs. Literally, blood flowed down the stairs. Massacred on the steps of the cathedral. Most people in the West have never heard of what happened at Timișoara in 1989. But this led to the communist revolution. Here's a memorial to the martyrs who died on the steps of the cathedral built outside in Timișoara Square. And wreaths piled up. I took these pictures back in 1990, just immediately after the Christmas Revolution. I went to Romania with my wife and Laura, and we ministered all over. This is in memory of a French journalist who got killed right here on this spot. And this poor girl, not even 14 years old, murdered on the spot by the Securitate. Just some of many. Bill Bathman, ministering in Timișoara Square, noticed the burned out shops. Everything on the ground floor was shot out, because the communists had been machine gunning and firing artillery right into crowds, so that all the buildings on the ground floor in Timișoara Square got burned out and hollowed out and wrecked. Bill Bathman standing under the new Romanian flag with the communist symbols cut out. Notice, no problem finding parking in Romania because so few people had vehicles. And a Christmas tree just visible to the left in Timișoara, free Romania. For the first time, people celebrate Christmas in 45 years in Romania. I ministered in this church, a Calvary Baptist church, which had been confiscated by the communists in 1945 and turned to a bottling factory. And this, immediately after the Christmas Revolution, they turned this into a church again. The church reclaimed this place and became Calvary Baptist Church, which used to be the church in Arad. And Vladimir Lenin's idols and statues were sent to the junk heap. The Brandenburg Gate was opened and restored, and the chariot was turned facing the west again. At the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, helium-filled balloons were set off all the way along where the Berlin Wall had been. And people had a phenomenal celebration of light overcoming darkness, and people celebrating one of the greatest events of my generation, to see the coming down of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of the Iron Curtain. And all where the wall had been, helium-filled balloons were sent off into the sky, symbolizing lifting of the wall and victory of light over darkness. Tremendous celebrations. This was even greater than the celebrations of the victory of the Springboks in the World Cup rugby. the euphoria to see the Berlin Wall come down. For those of us who worked behind the Iron Curtain and sought to serve the persecuted church, this was the greatest answer to prayer in our lifetime. You'll find on the frontlinemissionsa.org website lots of great materials and resources about the persecuted church as well, and of the coming down the Iron Curtain. I've got a newsletter here that we produced on the 20th anniversary of the fall of Berlin Wall. A lot of historic pictures and details and statistics about the Glasnost Gulag and the Berlin Wall, and those are on the table there. Please help yourself. It's a real commemorative historic collector's item. This coming Sunday, the 12th of November, is the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. And I think we should, when we look at Christians being persecuted in Red China and North Korea, we should be encouraged by the fact that we faced worse before with the Iron Curtain of the Soviet Union. And by prayer and action, we overcame that. We can win this victory. So there's a lot of frontline newsletters available, free to read online or download as PDFs off the frontline website. The great books in our library, like the Black Book of Communism. Bill Bethman wrote books like Going Through, Even If the Door Is Closed. This picture is taken from Checkpoint Charlie. That's part of the height of the Cold War. I've written Frontline Behind Enemy Lines for Christ, which includes our work behind the Iron Curtain before and after the Iron Curtain came down, ministering amongst terrorists, winning communists to Christ. We've produced evangelistic tracts to reach communists, like The World's Greatest Revolutionary, which points out these are not real revolutionaries. The communist revolutionaries are fakes, frauds, hypocrites, and failures. The greatest revolutionary is our Lord Jesus Christ. He brings regeneration to heart. He is more than a conqueror. David's a conqueror. David killed Goliath. Jesus is more than a conqueror. He can take Saul, the persecutor of the church, and turn him to Paul, the missionary and the apostle of the church. We need to be winning communists for Christ. The heart of communism, communist liberation, myth and reality, glamorizing a mass murderer. These are just some tracks I've designed and which are available on a website for reaching out to communists and how to evangelize people who are revolutionaries and radicals. A lot of our books available from Christian Liberty Books or as e-books that can be used. And of course, we are saying the best way to beat the communists is with Bibles. They come to us with bombs. We should go to them with Bibles. They come to us with hate. We should go to them with love and with the gospel of Christ. The best way to defeat terrorism is through evangelism, to turn our enemies into evangelists. And we've got a Great Commission course in the Biblical Worldview Summit coming up early January, when we'll aim to do just that. And coming up this weekend, we're trying to mobilize friends, family, neighbors, congregations into remembering the persecuted church.